flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
And a good afternoon to you, and welcome to Flavour with Alan Alder and me, Matt Bentman, bringing you the tastiest food news and stories for Cambridge and the surrounding area. So, what have you been up to, Alan?
Well, I had a fascinating conversation with Alex Rushmer of Van der Lyle about what he's particularly proud of on his current menu, and it gives a great insight into the thought and inventiveness that he puts into the creation of new dishes. I also found out from Richard Stokes of Finboys what lies behind their prawn toast, which was so highly regarded by Jay Rayner, amongst others. And what about you, Matt?
Well, I went to visit a young Italian couple who set up their handmade pasta business last year. They began on Cambridge Market and have recently transitioned to a pop-up restaurant.
Well, another thing I did was I went to Caxton to see AD at Sweet Pea Market Garden and came away very impressed.
Very nice. And meanwhile, Sue Bailey has been talking to Regis Creppy of Amelie Restaurant about leaving their site at Grafton Centre and moving to Ben's Yard in Ely, and their latest move, a summer spot at Wickham Vineyard near Bury St Edmunds. All of these stories feature on today's programme, and we'll have our regular features too. Free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup.
So let's begin with my trip to Van der Lyle in Mill Road, where I spoke to the ever-inventive Alex Rushmer. Alex, is there a dish on your current menu that you're, you know, particularly pleased with or proud of?
Yes, there is. Yeah, it's late spring, early summer. It's got to be asparagus, I think. And asparagus is one of those ingredients that you know it's the start of summer and you've got the promise of 3 or 4 months of lovely warm weather to come in. And I try and do something different with asparagus every year. So this year we're getting our asparagus from Flourish. And we're serving it. We've got 3 different types, actually. So we've got the Flourish asparagus, and we're keeping it very, very simple. We steam it just to maintain that flavour, that colour, that texture, and the purity of that flavour. But we're also serving it with some wild asparagus, which is coming in from France, which is much smaller spears, sort of slightly more delicate in flavour, and white asparagus. So the white asparagus, we got into the kitchen a little bit earlier. The season starts a little bit earlier, particularly because it comes from the continent. But whilst we were waiting for the local green asparagus to come into season, we fermented it. So we do a lacto-fermentation on the white asparagus, and that gives the dish a lovely acidity and a lovely sort of salinity that runs through it. So we have 3 different types of asparagus on the dish. And then we're pairing that with a couple of different sauces as well, and those are both made with elderflower, which is also just coming into season, but we're actually using last year's elderflowers that we preserved over the course of the last year, right at the end of the elderflower season. So last May, we pickled a whole bunch of elderflowers, and we're using the elderflower vinegar in a beurre blanc and also in a pumpkin seed dressing with the asparagus. And then the little tips of the asparagus, the bits that sort of normally get chucked away, we're turning those into an asparagus puree. So you have sort of 4 different asparagus elements, a couple of little sauces. And I think as an essence of late spring, early summer, I think it's just a perfect dish, one that I'm incredibly proud of and one that goes down really well.
That's just fantastic. So how did that come about then?
It just happens to be 2 ingredients that are in season at the same time, and asparagus with a butter sauce is nothing new. Asparagus and hollandaise is a very classic combination.
Asparagus with elderflower isn't so
asparagus
common.
With elderflower is a little bit more unusual, but I think those, if you think about the wine pairing, so classic wine pairing with asparagus would be something Sauvignon Blanc based, and Sauvignon Blanc classically has elderflower notes in it. So I suppose there's some sort of connection there that triggered something in my brain and thought that asparagus and elderflower would be a good combination, and it turns out that it is.
That's fantastic. And what's people's reaction been?
It's been really positive, incredibly positive. Yeah, it's a delicate dish. It's a light dish. It comes between two slightly heavier dishes on the tasting menu. So it's a bit of a sort of fresh, super seasonal, super light, delicate dish between two slightly, let's say, earlier spring dishes.
Right. And will you keep it on or will you develop it further? Have you got any thoughts on how it might develop?
I don't know. And that's one of the nice things about the way we cook here is that no dish is ever complete. And there may be some idea that somebody in the kitchen has, or there might be another ingredient coming in. So that's the exciting thing about having a tasting menu that isn't fixed. It means that we can change dishes and alter them according to what's in season and what's delicious. I never say a dish is perfect. I never say a dish is reached its final form. So it will certainly be on the menu as long as asparagus is in season. But as to what the dish will look like in 3 or 4 weeks' time, who knows?
Right, permanent evolution. Right.
There's also a sweet dish that we have on at the moment. The first of the two dessert courses that we're doing went on the menu this week and was inspired by a little walk around the garden at home. And we have a rhubarb patch and a lovage patch that have gone absolutely crazy, and they're right next to each other. And I've learned subsequently that you shouldn't plant the two together because they just go absolutely bonkers. But the two things work really well together, and there's the classic adage, if it grows together, it goes together. So we're doing a rhubarb sorbet, poached rhubarb sorbet, really fresh and light, very zingy. It's good after the main course. And that's being served with a granita, which is cucumber and lovage. So those sort of slightly savoury, slightly acidic flavours all work incredibly well together, and it turns out that it's a really good pairing, so I'm super happy with that one.
That sounds fantastic. I've never heard of rhubarb with lovage, actually.
No, nor have I.
Rhubarb and ginger.
And maybe we're the first, who knows.
Okay, thanks very much, Alex, that's brilliant.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah, I found that fascinating. Not just the combinations of rhubarb and lovage, asparagus and elderflower, but the very thought process that Alex went through to arrive at those ideas. For me, it's a whole new way of thinking about the possibilities. Really exciting. Oh, and by the way, Culinaris is selling wild asparagus if you fancy some. Now, a few steps along the road from Van der Luyl, of course, is Finboy's, and I popped in there to find out what's on their menu that Richard Stokes is particularly proud of. Richard, is there a dish on the menu currently or recently or to come which you're particularly pleased with?
We change the menu in its entirety every week or so, but we change the menu daily as well. The only dish that stayed on for a long period of time is our prawn toast dish, which we've kept on ever since the Jay Rayner review of sort of 18 months ago, when he said it's the best prawn toast in the country. So that just came about from a staff trip to London and eating at Michelin star place. We had prawn toast, which was very, very ordinary, and I just boasted I could make a better prawn toast than that. So the staff said, okay, give it a go. So we did, and that's how that came about. And that's been on all the while since. And also probably our house-made sourdough crumpets with crab and cacio pepe have been on for probably a year. But yeah, everything else changes, you know, weekly, really. I suppose...
Why, Richard? Why does it change so frequently?
To keep everybody interested. Probably staff more than customers, in a way. But yeah, we just like to change things up, you know, change the layout of the menu, change the font of we're using on the menu. Yeah, just to keep things fresh and just moving along, really.
I suppose working with fish, you've got the advantage that fish does pair with a lot of other things, doesn't it?
Yeah, we try and keep things classic to a degree. I guess, you know, Jay and myself and Danny and Jordan, we're well versed in French classics and Spanish and Italian and Japanese. We use lots of umami sort of flavours. It's probably the veg is most exciting, that you then, keeping that seasonal as possible, you mix with different seafood. So obviously in the last few weeks we've had asparagus, fresh peas from Italy, and fresh boiled beans, morel mushrooms. So they come in at the same time each year. Green garlic is the thing that you know, we like to see. So we pair those with multiple dishes on the menu, really. Obviously, fish have a season, you know, when there's a short period of time, then you can't use bass in March and April when they're spawning, and the same with the turbots. And, you know, now the turbots are all back in full flow and bass are back again. But it's probably looking forward to the certain fruits and vegetables that then we pair with the fish, yeah.
Yeah. OK, so the prawn toast is the top tip, and that's going to stay on the menu for a while longer.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think that's there to stay for now, yeah.
Brilliant. OK. Thanks very much,
Thank
Richard.
You, Alan. Thank you very much. Thank Thanks. You.
Yeah, that was an interesting comment, that it's the vegetables that accompany the fish, which are the really varying and seasonal items. But fish is so versatile, isn't it? Helped by its texture and its ability to carry other flavours without being overwhelmed by them. I mean, chorizo, for example, or curry sauces. I love fish.
Yeah. I love them with lemon and lime, actually.
Lemon and lime. How interesting.
Because I tend to like things like pilchards, mackerel, sardines, anchovies sometimes, but selectively. My sister does a mackerel pate.
Oh, I love mackerel pate.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, just take the skin off the fish, mayonnaise, 2 tablespoons of mayonnaise, teaspoon of horseradish and the juice of, say, half a lemon. Gorgeous.
Oh.
And fresh.
Oh. Now details of free food available in and around Cambridge. And the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, which exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Anne on Tennyson Road is offering a box of Mexican spiced chai black tea bags, whilst Emma in Ditton Fields has a pot of vegan-friendly chocolate buttons and a pot of popcorn kernels, 450 grams, that's almost a full packet. To put that into context, that will easily make bags and bags of fresh popcorn, or, say, 7 large tubs that you get at the cinema. Very healthy homemade snack. Next up is Z, who lives near the Clay Farm Centre, has 5 boxes of tea bags to give away, and that's because Z only drinks herbal teas now, and these are like a standard English breakfast. And that's pretty much it. It seems to be, well, more the case that Olio is active during weekdays, as we've mentioned before. But I used Olio just the other day to pick up 2 4-pinters of milk, which is a saving of over £3. And, of course, it saves the milk from going to waste. So it's a good app, is Olio.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah. And there's another good app called Too Good To Go, which has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops, and it's often at less than half price. And they don't specify each unsold item because they don't know what's going to be unsold at the end of the day. So whatever it is, it's put into a magic bag ready for you to take home instead of being put in the bin. And some of the companies that have used it recently include Greggs and Cherry Hinton, Novi and Namaste, Pret, Upper Crust and Marks and Spencer's at the station, Spar in Chesterton and Sawston, the Co-op in Sawston, Marks and Spencer's at Adam Brooks Hospital, Barrington Village Stores, Budgeons and all. I could go on and on. Lots of places.
Oh, one extra thing to add to that. I forgot to mention this the last few episodes. I noticed that Tesco on the Cherry Hinton Road, where Cherry Hinton Road meets Hills Road, they do a thing where after 9 p.m, food that was reduced, they give away free.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah. Okay, on to our first news break now, and this is for Saturday, the 17th of May. Buran on Mill Road is closed today and next Saturday, that's the 24th, because of staff holidays.
Bold Brothers' new coffee shop in Hills Road, near the corner with Station Road, is now open. There's a call for food vans who are interested in attending the Trumpington Meadows and Fawcett School Summer Fair on the 28th of June. That's from 11:30 to 2 p.m. Please contact TM Food Vans via Instagram if you can be there.
The Cambridge Beer Festival is happening from the 19th to the 24th of May on Jesus Green, with 200 real ales, more than 80 ciders and perries, mead, wine, cheese and food vans. There's early afternoon sessions from Tuesday to Friday, and these are free to enter. The evening sessions are £5 or £6, depending on the day. And on Saturday, entry is £4, and that runs from noon till 10:30 p.m. Entry to all sessions, of course, is free for camera members.
North Stowe Tap and Social has a tap takeover on the 30th of May with London's Pressure Drop Brewery, one of my favourites. And market news. There's a food and craft market in Hoxton tomorrow. That's the 18th of May from 10 till 2. And it includes Barakas Greek Food, Websour Bakery, Pound's Worth with fresh fruit and vegetables, Mimi's handmade curries, Shelley's bakes with vegan cakes, and Gail's bees honey at the Hoxton Centre. And the Grantons Farmers Market is the 25th of May, 9 till 1. Linton's Farmers Market is on next on the 7th of June from 9 till 12. And as we'll be hearing a little later in the programme, Sweet Pea Market Garden has a plant sale and open day on the 26th of May. That's a bank holiday, and it will run from 10 till 2.
On the 3rd of June at Scots All Day in Mill Road, it's the return of Taco Tuesday. There will be both meat and vegan tacos available, as well as margaritas for £5 and beers for £4. Booking is advisable, though. They're expecting it to get really busy.
And on the 12th of June at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road, there's a June pop-up menu at £40 with bread, a canapé, starter, main and dessert, produced by Organic Garden. Well, that's all the news for now, but we'll have more later. This next feature is about Sasha, a baker, and Kira, a pastry chef. Last year, they came to Cambridge from the north of Italy and set up their business, Merlino Handmade Pasta, on Cambridge Market.
Yeah, think plant-based. Spinach, mushroom and tofu ravioli, bright pink vegan beetroot pasta, lots of different colours and pasta shapes, as well as the traditional sauces, breads, biscottis, etc. Well, this week, I caught up with Sasha and Kira because their Merlino team are running pop-up dining evenings at Barbarella Cafe in Chesterton.
Hi, I'm Chiara.
Hi, I'm Sasha.
And we run Merlino. Beautiful.
We love Barbarella. It's such a lovely little cafe just in the centre of Chesterton on the High Street.
Very welcoming community.
Frequent visitor of Barbarella. It's one of my favourite cafes in Cambridge. Really small, really cute. I've been coming through COVID and continue to come here on almost a weekly basis. I absolutely love it here. It's fantastic.
Yeah, Barbarella is a lovely little cafe by day. Amazing cake, very good coffee from Hot Number, so it's top quality. And every Friday and Saturday night, we take over the place and we turn it into a little restaurant.
We serve Italian food with a focus on fresh handmade pasta, so that's still part of our business, the fresh pasta.
Just a few tables, but that obviously makes it all very personal, and I think that's what the customers like. Must be fun, right?
Yeah, I love working here at Barbarella because, as you said, it's very intimate. So in a way, it feels like this is our little second house and we're having guests over, yeah. Which is not the same thing as a market because the time that you spend with the client is so short. Everybody is in a rush. They hear, you know, people tend to take time and you get to know them little by little, you know, bits of conversation here and there. Mm.
We had a customer, for example, that he comes like once every month. He saw that the place was quiet between sittings. Mm-hmm. So he opened the door and he said...
Basically, he was offering to sit down because he was seeing the place empty. Yeah, it was quite sweet.
See, not a lot of people do that. That's community, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a little bit more than a client. It's a little community that is growing up little by little and customer, you know, they start to know each other. Is the best part of the job, really.
So, what was it that took this couple from their stall at Cambridge Market to running restaurant dining at Barbarella Cafe?
We had a lot of ideas, but for a business, there's two key words. One is flexibility and the other one is persistence. Mm. And you need to be able to decide when is the time for more flexibility and for change and when you should persist with the market. So we give the market a go. It was an amazing experience. We met a lot of friendly and lovely people that opened the world to us. But then at some point, you know, we decided it was time to move on, yeah. And try to scale up a little bit more, you know, to stay up with our mission, I think.
Yeah, I think, as you said, the key is persistent, being flexible. Mm. Don't get attached to an idea. Like, we started with the pasta, but, like...
Yeah, we have so much more to give, yeah. Other than the pasta, so... We like to collaborate with a lot of business. We like growing with them.
For example, they're partnered with La Pizzica in Eddington.
Which uses our tiramisu and our panna cotta. If anyone is interested to try our tiramisu, you can find them there. When we can establish a positive cooperation, that's, I think, that's the best feeling because everybody's profiting from it. The clients are profiting, we are profiting.
So since I first met you back in January 2024... Your menu, the food that you've been offering, has developed.
But the menu is always centered on pasta and fresh-made pasta with a little bit of extra. I used to be a baker, So, of course, it makes sense for me to put some focaccia and some other bread types in the menu. And I try to play a lot with dough. And also, I like fermented stuff. I like fermented everything. So this season, we have vegan focaccia with pickled courgettes. It's a family recipe. We pickle our veggie with a little bit of oil and vinegar.
And yes, also regarding the desserts, at the beginning we were having like two desserts, they were always the same. But now we are a bit more flexible, so they do change weekly. But I think one of the staples one is the tiramisu, which is a all-time fashion, like people just love it.
I do enjoy a tiramisu.
Sometimes, you know, you have to listen to what people want and just give them the classics and they love it, so, yeah. There's always a way to change the recipe and spice it up a little bit. So with this menu, we're offering pistachio tiramisu, which is a little bit fresher and it goes better with the season.
This is my first time here for the pop-up, and the menu today, we've got spaghetti with pistachio and basil pesto. So I think that's going to have to be my choice here, and it looks like it's going to be a real winner.
I had never thought about doing anything else other than working with food. That was my passion since I was little. One of my first Christmas presents was actually a small kitchen toy. And I really fell in love with it. I remember the commercial, I remember everything. It was a small toy with an oven that was working, and you could bake like little cupcake and stuff like that. And you had the top with all the veggies and all the pots, and I remember spending hours and hours just like pretending to make food for my mother. Yeah.
And what did your friends think of that?
All my friends knew that was my passion, so no one was surprised when I chose, you know, the chef school in Italy. Yeah. I was always around food, you know, so part of my family, they are farmers, so I spent a lot of time on fields when I was young, and then in the kitchen. A lot of memory, you know, just sharing, you know.
I guess you guys really like working together, right?
Yes. I mean, don't get me wrong, sometimes we fight, we argue, but at the end of the day, it's really nice.
Yeah.
Sharing the same problem, the same winnings.
Yeah.
You have to put some measure in place. Like, we have a no work talk after 5 p.m. rule. Because sometimes we are too passionate that we end up talking too much about the one topic, and then we realize that we didn't talk about anything else all day. So we need to go out and do something.
Putting new things onto your menu. Oh, is it very much a collaboration?
It's a collaboration and a competition at the same time. We can be quite stubborn sometimes on silly details, and then the next day realize maybe I didn't pick the right fight for the night.
Sasha's more on the creative side. So, like, let's do this, let's do that. So more, like, grounded. So we balance each other out. So when we do a menu, it's like, most of the time it's like Sasha suggesting a main, and I'm like, oh, no, we can't do that. Let's do this.
And it's like me saying 100 different things, and Chiara say, actually, are you really sure you want to do that? Can we pull that off? Does that make sense with the rest of the menu? I'm like, nah, maybe not.
Any examples?
I wanted to do that. I won that one for a few weeks, and then I realized it wasn't very smart. I wanted to do porchetta just because I wanted to eat it, to be fair. I was missing porchetta. And Chiara said, I don't know, we never did mint in the menu, and also it's kind of warm outside.
We were opening just once a week at the time, so we were like, what if we don't sell all of this meat, what do we do?
I had an idea for the accent.
But then it ended up on the menu.
Yeah, for a few weeks, and then I realized, okay, that doesn't make any sense with the rest of the menu. There was just pasta, and the porchetta at the end, it was warm outside, so we sold a few. And I end up with a bit of waste, and Chiara was like, not gonna say I told you so.
Well, Sasha and Chiara, it's been great to catch up with you again. A year and 5 months down the line, long may it continue.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks so much, Matt, and thanks to all the volunteers at the radio.
Quite right, and you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge Radio. Now, Molino's menu changes regularly.
Their most recent menu featured mains like mascarpone and parmesan ravioli with thyme and lemon zest, and starters like Sasha's homemade focaccia with sweet and sour courgette and plant-based cheese. Whilst desserts, well, they can be either something experimental or even traditional, like their well-favoured tiramisu. So if you like the sound of all of those things, you can book a table with Mulino at their pop-up restaurant at Barbarella's Cafe. That's every Friday and Saturday. It runs from 5 till 9 p.m. at 39 High Street, Chesterton.
More news now. Over half term, which is from the 24th of May to the 1st of June, the Food Museum in Stowmarket has a bread week with family baking workshops running from 10:30 to 11:30. Details are on their website. And also at the Food Museum in Stowmarket, and proving very, very popular, is an exhibition that's running till next year about school dinners. It's getting a lot of publicity and a lot of people are going, so that's something else maybe for half term.
Next up, there are some Meet the Cows talks coming up from the Wandering Herd. Now, they're at Wandlebury Country Park on the 24th of May and the 14th of June, and in Trumpington Meadows on the 12th of July and 5th of August. The Wandlebury events are free, with a suggested donation to Cambridge Past, Present and Future. You can book via the Wandlebury Country Park website. There is a fee for the Trumpington Meadows events, and you can book via the Beds, Cams and North Ants Wildlife Trust.
The British Library's annual food season is underway shortly, with lots of talks about food. Cambridge-born Felicity Cloak is on at 12:30 on Sunday the 1st of June, talking about the food of the USA, and of course her book about that is due out very soon. And Cambridge resident Bea Wilson is on at 2 p.m. on that same date, talking about some of our favourite kitchen things. Again, that's related to her new book. But that's the news for now. We'll have some wine news in the second half of the programme, along with a visit to Amelie and to Sweet Pea Market Garden. So we'll see you after the break. Don't go away.
Cambridge Radio.
Late Night Mondays. Take a step back in time to the golden age of music as Greg Butler revives the classic sounds of yesteryear. Dusting off 78 RPM records, Greg plays vintage gems from the 1910s through to the 1960s, from jazz and blues to the early days of rock and roll.
And they were still making 78s well up into the late 60s to about 68, I think, is the latest one I've got.
Discover the charm of crackling vinyl and the stories behind the tracks on the Kipper the Cat Show, online whenever you want, and Monday at 11 on Cambridge Radio.
The annual Bridge the Gap charity walk returns to Cambridge on Sunday, September the 14th. I'm Neil Thompson from Romsey Mill.
And I'm Lana Matthews from the Arthur Rank Hospice Charity. Come join us on this family-friendly, leisurely stroll through the grounds of some of Cambridge's finest colleges in support of our charities.
And this year is a cause for special celebration, as it will be the 25th Bridge the Gap walk.
The Society of Cambridge Tourist Guides will be on hand to talk about the history of the colleges and their grounds.
The walk starts and ends on Parker's Peak, where there will be food, drink and entertainment for everyone. Registration is easy. Just visit arhc.org.uk/BTG.
Or look out for the QR code on the Bridge the Gap posters and flyers displayed across Cambridge.
Listen to Cambridge Radio on your smart speaker.
Say Ask Radio Player for Cambridge Radio. This is Cambridge Radio.
Cambridge Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour. And Sue Bailey has been visiting Amelie Restaurant, where there is a lot going on.
I'm speaking to Regis Crepy of Amelie. And people, I'm sure, may well remember Amelie in the Grafton Centre, where his son set up the restaurant there. But things have changed a little bit, so I'm just doing a very quick catch-up with Regis. Hi, Regis. Tell me, what has changed and where are you now?
So what has changed? We've decided to leave the Grafton Centre, who was very successful when we opened, until the end. But the plan of the new owner was not to have any restaurant or any catering facilities. So we left and we went to next to Ely, 3 miles away from Ely, called Ben's Yard, where we've got a cafe, a 80 Covers Cafe, who serve pastry, savoury things, which we make ourselves, and a restaurant, 150-seat restaurant, beautiful place, where we serve au flambcuche, or tarte flambée, but also an old à la carte restaurant, small plates and main course, and also a wonderful roast at weekends.
How very nice. And I have eaten there, and I could say, yes, the food is excellent. But I'm actually here in Wicken Vineyard, which is just the other side of Bury St. Edmunds. So how long have you been here?
So we open officially on the 25th and April. We started 2 weeks before to trial the business, and now we are going to be here for about the whole summer, but also maybe in winter. It will all depend how it has been taken and how it's done and how people like it. But so far, so good. People welcome the product extremely well around Bury. You remember I had a restaurant in Bury St. Edmunds called Maison Bleu, and then today we are happy to be back around here. And obviously, don't forget, it's my son who is the main person, and I'm here to help.
Indeed. So is your son here today?
He was here this morning and decided to leave his dad so he could go to Ben's yard, where it's extremely busy. But he will be here tomorrow morning again, and I might be there, but he's there on and off. If he's not here, I'm here. If he's not at Ben's yard, I'm at Ben's yard. So we are relaying each other's.
Oh, that's lovely. A lovely partnership. So is Amelie open in both venues all the week, or is it just weekends?
So Amelie will be open at Wicken Vineyards at the moment, but we intend to open 4 days a week following the summer. And next week we'll start maybe 4 days a week. A lot of people have asked about our opening time. At the moment it's lunchtime, but we are doing, if people want to follow us on Instagram, amelierestaurant.co.uk, and they will find that we are organizing some special evening, special party, so special wedding reception event here at Wicken's Vineyard on the evening, with people singing, professional singer, obviously, and then specifically to bring people into the fantastic nature here at Wicken's.
Mm. So do you think you'll be coming back to Cambridge anytime soon?
Well, we would love to. We had a cafe in centre of Cambridge as well, but because of the challenge we had with Ben's yard, we decided to concentrate at the moment at Ben's yard to sort it, and as soon as it's done and perfected, we will go back to Cambridge, I'm sure.
And am I allowed to ask you the secret of how do you manage to get your flammkuchen, your tarte flambé, so amazingly light? It's almost like a layered pastry. It's certainly not pizza.
So the secret for the flammkuchen or tarte flambé, it's not really a secret, because but its dough has got no yeast, so you don't feel bloated. It's not like a bread for pizza, where the bread raise under the influence of the yeast. Ours don't have yeast, so it's only a bit of oil, flour and water, and then it's extremely thin, crispy, and makes it stops you from being feeling bloated at the end. The product is extremely light, so people, when they try this, they prefer these than pizza, and I'm not saying that it's better than pizza, it's an alternative to pizza. People can have that instead of, they can carry on with pizza, but not before going to sport.
No, I think it's exquisite. Angel's kiss.
Thank you.
and just the layers, do you actually roll it a lot then to get the layers? How do you do that?
It's done by obviously extremely efficient machine. So they flatten the dough very thin, 1 millimeter thin, and it stays like this. It's cooked for about a second at 1,000 degrees. So it allowed the dough to be able to last for a month. So about health and safety, it's perfect product. Obviously, we get them from France now because we don't have time. We produce so many, we don't have time to make it ourselves. And it's how it lasts so long, and it's so delicious.
That's so clever. But of course, you obviously know how to make it yourselves,
yes.
But know what quality is. And
yes.
Certainly, it's
yes.
Very high quality.
Yeah. It's a top quality. I think we've got one of the best dough in Europe, created by a German company who produce now in France as well. We also sell the dough to about 40 pubs around the country who ask for the dough, because we see it's a separate company called Amelie Distribution, mm-hmm. And then we can supply the dough to pubs, restaurants, etc.
Wow. I didn't realise you's expanded in such interesting ways. That's fantastic.
Yes, yeah. We try to see what can be done today. With everything's happening, you need to find a way to expand. And then, yes, that's what we want to do. Obviously, when I say we, it will be Alexander who will be doing that. I've done my bit in the past. Now it's up to him to carry on.
Yes.
But I'll be there to help.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, well, thank you so much, Regis.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much. Nice talking to you.
There's Supercharge with Wine, 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 taking us into our wine news. And on the 21st of May, there is a cheese and wine evening at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road. A tasting of wines from Alsace, Austria and Germany on the 28th of May, and another wine and cheese evening on the 11th of June. These evenings, they all begin at 7 p.m.
Gutter and Stars has a tasting on the 22nd of May in French's Road. Tastings of the new spring wines they've produced, including a new and very rare pink wine.
And on the 23rd of May at Amelie in Ben's Yard near Ely, there is a wine and food afternoon with a guided tasting of three Rhone Valley wines, along with a four-course seasonal menu to pair with the wines. The cost is £42.50 and spaces are limited. It goes from 3 to 5 p.m. and there is a repeat event on the 20th of June at the same venue.
Now, a few weeks ago, I went to see the film 6 Inches of Soil in Barrington, and what an excellent and interesting film it is. And one of the local people who features heavily in it is Aidy from Sweet Pea Market Garden. So I resolved to go and visit her and see what she's up to. And soon you'll be able to go as well, but more about that later. Aidy, I finally made it to your Sweet Pea Market Garden. I'm very impressive it is. I'm surprised how big the site is. But could you just remind our listeners what you're about, what your sort of philosophy is, what you're aiming for?
Yeah, we're here on my market garden, which I rent from a local farmer. It's about 4 acres within the fence, and we have agroforestry, we have ponds, and then we're growing a mixture of vegetables and fruit. My overall aim, or the overall aim for Sweet Pea Market Garden, is to grow a resilient food ecosystem, local food ecosystem, and to feed our community.
Right, what do you mean by a resilient food ecosystem?
So we hope to inspire and support other people to do similar things. I would love to see a market garden in every village, and for us to be building a network of local farms that produce our own food.
Right, and it strikes me you've set yourself quite a task, because you're in quite a dry area, aren't you?
Yes.
And you've got clay soil, which I think is not the easiest to work with.
No, when I started out, I looked at where other people were growing in the country, and there are lots of people in Devon and Wales, but there aren't many people around here, and I grew up in Cambridgeshire, so I really wanted to see more local food growing here. Actually, the clay soil is beneficial for us with the dry weather, because it does retain moisture a lot better than some other soils. So as long as we can improve our soil and add lots of organic matter and improve the soil structure, then the clay will support us through the droughts.
Right. So can you show me some of the things that you're growing and some of the things you're doing that helps the soil?
Yeah, so you can see here we're standing in our second polytunnel, and we've got wood chip on the paths, and we've actually started putting a lot of straw from the farm on the paths. And that's adding organic material to the soil for the worms to draw down and improve soil structure, and it's also retaining moisture. We add compost to all of our beds, and we actually broad fork them as well, which is like just reducing some of the compaction in the clay soil. And then the other thing we do is we grow a really diverse range of plants. So we grow vegetable plants, but we also grow green manures, so plants that are specifically there to get their roots in the ground and feed the soil, like nitrogen-fixing plants.
What, like clover?
Things like clover, yeah. And we also have a lot of flowers for biodiversity and pollinators. So you can see at the end of the polytunnel here, we've got some chamomile and the first cornflowers that have just come out. We let our crops go to seed. So we've got coriander that's flowering there. And the great thing about our markets is we have a rainbow salad that has a really wide range of flowers and herbs and things like that, which came about because we were doing all of this biodiversity work, but it means that anyone who's buying the rainbow salad is supporting our work to support the agroecology of our market garden.
I can see that polytunnels are a tremendous advantage. It's much warmer in here than it is outside, but isn't there a problem with pests in polytunnels, and what do you do like that? About that?
Yeah, we found this year we have quite a big aphid burden on some of our early plants, and we are organic, we're certified organic, so we don't use any sprays, and actually I don't really believe in using them. So what we do is we try and support the predators, so provide habitat for predators. All of these flowers and things that we're growing will encourage them in.
What sort of predators would that be? Ladybirds?
Ladybirds, parasitoid wasps, spiders, flies, all of those things will eat other insects. And then for things like slugs, you want beetles and birds to come in. So we leave the doors open, and we also plant flowers so that it encourages those things to come into the space.
Okay, we're primarily interested in the food you're growing, of course. Do you think growing in the way that you're growing enhances flavour? I guess also the varieties that you grow.
Yeah, I think growing on a small scale allows you to select varieties that might not be so productive on a bigger scale, but right. have better flavour. We specifically choose varieties that do taste really nice, and we can also nurture them a bit more because we're on a small scale, so we can grow things that are a bit more tricky.
For example,
aubergines, we can grow them in a polytunnel. And a lot of the salad leaves that we grow are really best when they're harvested and eaten almost immediately. They need to be harvested when it's very cool, so we harvest them early in the day. And then because we're taking them direct to market, people get to eat them when they're very fresh.
So they've been harvested the day. When you go to a market, the things people are buying, you have harvested that morning.
Yes, yeah. Wow. So most things, there might be a few things that we do the day before, but especially our salad, that's really important to me that we harvest it on the morning of the market so it's extra fresh.
Yeah, yeah. And how's it going? You've been here for, is it 3 years, 4 years?
Yes, so we're going into our fourth year.
Are you making progress? Are you managing to get more land cultivated?
Yes, yeah. So far we've done it all by hand. We are branching out into a little bit of machinery to try and make the job a little bit easier. But we've slowly grown the space that we're growing on every year, and we're actually putting some of the space into green manures so that we continue to feed the soil and build it. I think one of my biggest challenges is actually producing enough. I think we have more of a demand than we have produce
at
the moment. So it's just working out how to scale while also not overstretching ourselves too much financially.
I mean, is it financially viable, do you think?
I think it's a work in progress. It definitely can be. There is the challenge of the seasonal nature of the work. So currently everyone who works for me is seasonal and has other work that they can pick up over the winter.
Right.
And the same with me. But I'm planning on actually scaling some of our microgreens over the winter so that we can have a longer season, and we're going to put in another polytunnel, which really helps with season extension.
Right. Yeah, you've got an open day coming up, haven't you, when you're selling some of your plants. Can you tell us when it is and what sort of things you'll be selling?
Yes, so it's on the 26th of May, which is the bank holiday Monday. So we'll have an open day, we'll have some teas and coffees, a few farm tours during the day where I'll show people around, and then we'll have plants available. Basically all of the plants that we grow we'll have available. So we have tomatoes, peppers, chilies, as long as they get through the aphids, salad, kale, chard, all sorts.
Right, and
available
for sale. So that's near the end of May, so the danger of frost is pretty well past then, so people can just buy the plants and plant them.
Yes, right. Yeah, and they'll all be hardened off so they can go straight out in the garden.
Right. One of my life obsessions is nice tomatoes. Have you got some good varieties?
Yes, we've got some very, very good varieties. We've got a couple of really good outdoor ones that people probably know, like Gardener's Delight, and a Welsh variety called Ailsa Craig. And then we've got some really fun other cherry tomatoes, lots of different colours and flavours of those.
Different coloured tomatoes in a salad is just fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, salad caprese with the different types of tomato. I bought some black opal tomatoes from you a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
They're a tremendous colour.
Yes.
Brilliant. OK. And the market garden is open on the 26th then, from what time?
Between 10 and 2.
And there's places for people to park?
There's plenty of parking, and you can find directions on our website, which is sweetpeamarketgarden.co.uk.
Right. It's also on Google Maps, I discovered.
Yes, you can find it on there as well. Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. OK, well, thanks very much, Aidy.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Aidy and her produce are at many of the farmers' markets around South Cambridgeshire, and there's a list of where she's going to be on her website, Sweet Pea Market Garden. And, of course, she's also opposite Cambridge Station every Friday from 12 till 2. And just a final reminder, you can visit her at the Market Garden on the 26th of May from 10 till 2. And she also has weekly volunteering opportunities if you want to get involved in what really is quite an exciting and important project. Oh, and I should also mention it is on her website. She's about to start a local box scheme as well. Good.
And there's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Yeah, Market Square Coffee and Cake, who are on Cambridge Market on Fridays and Saturdays and who do the most wonderful burnt Basque cheesecake and also sell very good coffee. Their legendary lemon drizzle cake is back, made with freshly zested and hand-squeezed lemons. They don't use concentrate, and they use premium ground almonds for perfect texture. So that's if you're in Cambridge today, head for the market. Heath Fruit Farm has posted a photograph which carries very good news, which is to say that the cherries on their cherry trees have set well and they should be ready in July. They've still got to make sure they can protect them from the birds, wasps, fruit flies and thunderstorms, though. So we live in hope. Daily Bread, which has been there for 30 years now, selling, it's a sort of large independent Whole Foods shop, more like a warehouse really, and coffee shop, is feeling the pressure right now with rising costs, people tending to go to big retailers more, and they are missing one or two of their key products, but they're doing everything to get those items back on the shelves, and they wish you would go and shop there. That's just off King's Hedges Road. Ellie Matter in Cambridge has started baking its own bread, which is very good news. And 6 inches of Soil, which we mentioned a few minutes ago, has been shortlisted in the Fortnum & Mason Awards, I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
The 6 inches of Soil film has been shortlisted for that. Danny Cooks has got a Blend and Blend event coming up on the 31st of May. More details on her website. And Maddingley Three Horseshoes is now serving dinner on a Sunday from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. And I think that's quite enough, isn't it? What a lot. Right, OK, well, we've got a little bit of time, so I have my copy of Feast, the Guardian's food magazine here, and they have this new feature called The Filter, which we've mentioned before, in which somebody eminent on their staff tests different varieties of a particular product. And today it's Jose Pizarro, who's a Spanish food writer, and he's testing tinned sardines. And tinned food is very interesting. And it's sort of quite popular. It's quite a trendy thing in Britain at the moment. But in other countries, tinned fish is perpetually a big deal. And there's a shop in Lisbon that I've been to which sells only tinned fish. Doesn't sell anything else. The shelves have just got tinned fish on them. And it's a beautiful shop. And tinned fish are often in very beautiful tins. Anyway, Jose Pizarro is testing tinned sardines, and he says that the first thing you notice when you open a tin of sardines is the look and then the smell and the texture of the fish. They should be headless, he says, but whole, not filleted or skinned, and the flesh should feel firm. The bones should also have some substance. If you can barely feel them, the fish is likely overcooked. Now, the best tinned sardines, he recommends, is Ortiz, O-R-T-I-Z, sardines a la Antigua in olive oil, which you can get from Waitrose. And he says, simply the best. The flavour, the texture, everything is just perfect. And that's the reason why these cost top dollar. And actually, they do cost top dollar. They're £6.25 for 100 grams. Whereas the Marks and Spencer's sardines are £1 for 120 grams. Yeah. So six times the price, and you don't get as much. But
you get to taste the bones. Or notice the bones, I suppose.
But you get a nice bony experience, yeah. Right. But anyway, I thought that was really interesting, and I'm going to try some of these, because I like tinned sardines. I like tinned fish, particularly tinned sardines. Mm. I've got time for a couple of other...
We do, yeah.
Quick things. There's a very nice-looking recipe, if only I could find it, from Thomasina Mears. Chopped mango salad with crisp chickpeas, which just looks wonderful. And she has a second recipe, potato cake with crab, onions and curry leaves, which sounds like an interesting combination, so that's good as well. And there was another one. Where is it? Oh, yes, Nicola Lamb, mango shortcakes with obviously small ripe Indian mangoes, and she likes Alfonso. Of course, everybody likes Alfonso. Mm. They're incredibly expensive, though. And she also has, harking back to your feature earlier in the programme, pistachio tiramisu.
Ah.
So there's a variant on it. Anyway, all of those things are in the Saturday Guardian Feast magazine. Oh, yeah, let's have a look at what Rachel Roddy's up to as well. Meatfeigle or puff pastry and cream sandwich cake, which just looks lovely.
Mango shortcakes, I've never heard of until you mentioned it, but I can already imagine they must be lovely.
Yeah, I want one.
Yeah. and I really hate developing blind spots. I've never really considered the difference in the types of tin fish. So when you say like sardines, pilchards, yeah. I do see them on the shelves, but sometimes I generally tend to stick to the same type.
Yeah.
I never noticed that I wasn't noticing the bones.
Oh, really? How interesting. Yeah. I mean, some people, like my wife, for example, doesn't like the bones. She removes the skeleton. I love them. I love the texture. I love the crunch of them.
Oh, right.
Yeah, adds to the pleasure. Nothing like eating a fish bone.
Would you say the same thing if you were getting fish and chips?
Well, no, because they're too hard. But I know, strictly speaking, they're not bones, they're cartilage. But the bones, in inverted commas, in skate, which some people don't eat, I really enjoy.
Oh, right. So, yeah, I did have a big problem with that. How do you enjoy them? The bones.
Well, because they're not bones, they're cartilage. So they're just crunchy. They're not hard like bones. You can chew your way through them. You're making me feel a bit of a freak, Matt.
And there's Green Onions taking us into our job section. And the Three Hills in Bartlow is looking for a full-time restaurant manager to lead their front of house team. They're also looking for up to three gap year students to join front of house. No experience necessary, you will get training. There's full or part-time positions available, and the work will run from now until the end of the year. For more info or to apply, just email info@thethreehills.co.uk.
Flourish Farm Shop in Hildesheim needs an early riser to help deliver produce to customers on Friday mornings. The job starts at the end of May or the beginning of June, and their email is office@flourishproduce.co.uk.
And finally, Aromi has vacancies for a number of roles: cafe manager, pizzeria manager, junior and senior pizza chefs, baristas, and a pizzeria supervisor. If you're interested in any of those positions, just contact Aromi via their email address, jobs@aromi.co.uk. And that takes us to the end of our programme for today. We are here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon and repeated on Mondays at 2 p.m. And we're also available as a podcast from all of the usual places. Coming up next is the Cambridge Music Mix, followed by Home with Lucy Malazzo at 4.
We'll be back on the 31st of May with lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. And so until then, from me and Matt, goodbye.
Goodbye.
A big, big city, and it's always the same. Can never be too pretty. Tell me your name, is it out of line? If I was to be bold and say, would you be mine? Because I may be a beggar and you may be the queen. I know I may be on a downer, I'm still ready to dream. Though it's 3 o'clock, the time is just the time it takes for you to talk. So if you're well, it's a big, big city and the lights are all out. But it's as much as I can do, you know, to figure you out. And I must confess, my heart's all broken pieces and my head's a mess. In the morning and I'm walking along beside the ghost of every drink I hear who's ever done wrong. And it's you, whoa, that's got me going crazy for the things you do. And so if you're crazy, I-